And welcome to another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. Ari Rosenbaum here with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
Doing great, sir. I am doing great.
Great to hear. By the time you hear this, it'll be August. And like our discussion last week, in my opinion, with August rolling around, the summer's already over. Or, you know, or until Sam Adams has Oktoberfest on tap, which will probably be another 2-3 weeks.
The thing with summer is it takes forever to get here, and it leaves in a hurry.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I'm already looking at, like, some of the August events that I got to attend to. You know, we take off that 401k conference. We're not going to have another one until September 20th in Cleveland, so we take the summer off because I just think it's kind of nonsensical to have a summer event when so many people are on vacation. But it's like I'm already like booking events for like late August, you know, family vacation and some autograph shows. My son's a big autograph hound, so I just put a lot of money down to meet a whole bunch of New York Giants at some event, former New York Giants at some event in mid-August, and I already put down money, and I don't know if I put in Yiddish, or I think it's Yiddish, a nechora, which is like you put like a curse, or it's like a jinx. I bought tickets for a signing in 2 weeks with Jeff McNeil and Noah Syndergaard. So that might probably mean that Noah Syndergaard is going to be traded by the deadline. So by the time you hear this, you'll find out whether they trade Syndergaard, Wheeler, Frazier, or, you know, nobody at all. But knowing the Mets, it's the usual July 31st fire sale.
Syndergaard's going to be in Minnesota, I think.
I don't think Minnesota. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, if, being a Mets fan, you kind of be cynical. Why, you know, instead of trading the guy who's going to be a free agent in the offseason, who's not that great, is the number three starter, you're going to trade your number two starter who's got 2 years under control. And, you know, I'm still – some of these trades, you know – trading Bobby Bonilla for Alex Ochoa. I mean, Alex Ochoa, that big five-tool player, he never really panned out. And the one that still hurts, I met the man, but 27 years later, it still hurts that the Mets traded David Cohn away for Jeff Kent and Ryan Thompson. And, of course, Jeff Kent only became a star after the Mets traded him to Cleveland for Carlos Baerga, who was one of those players who was a great player. Then all of a sudden, he hit the wall, and that was it.
Yeah, he was part of that those sick Indian teams.
He was. You know, he was part of that youth movement. He was, you know, one of the guys that with Sandy Alomar Jr. and Albert Bell that they signed to these long-term deals. And just at, you know, a certain point, I forget when they got Baerga, might have been 96 or 95. He just, like, hit the wall by then. You know, 93 is when I think they might have been the last year at Municipal Stadium. Or it might be the first year at Jacobs Field, now Progressive Field. You know, heck, I don't, you know. But he's one of those players, just was great and then just hit the wall and that was it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, some players, you know, they put on uniforms and they get better. It seems like it's the opposite effect when folks put on the Mets uniform.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, let's talk about our events right off the bat. Cleveland, we mentioned that, September 20th. October 11th, we'll be at Foxborough Gillette Stadium. That's our first football-themed event. We've had a lot of interest. We sold out of the presenting sponsorship really early. Supporting sponsors still have room. East Rutherford, New Jersey, we finally booked that one. I got the contract. I actually have to mail away with a check. But we got that for November the 8th. That's a Friday. With all due respect to the Jets fans, it's a Giants theme event because I'm a Giants fan. That's how we roll. You know, we got to do, you know, colors. And I've never been a big fan of green and white, maybe because that's the Eagles' colors. But anyway, we got that, and we've got a lot of interest from that. Just Alaris is one of our, you know, our good friends at Alaris. They've sponsored so many events. They'll be sponsoring East Rutherford as well. And then we got Arlington, Texas at December. But, of course, these regional events are just a drum roll for the national event. Dan and I will be at Disney World in March 2020. March the 10th and 11th, and then, of course, you stop by us a couple days before. You get to go around with Disney World, the park. We got the park tickets. The discount park tickets are on the website at that 401ksite.com. You know, you can buy 3, 4, 5-day passes, park hopper tickets, all that kind of stuff with substantial discounts, to what Disney would normally charge. A lot of fun. We got a couple new sponsors that we'll mention soon within the next couple weeks. Also adding some speakers as well. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. And, like Dan and I say, it's going to be different than some of the other national events. I think these national events that we're not really competing against them, but the other national events that are long-running, you know, they have their niche, and we're going to have ours. And our kind of niche is going to be something different. More interactive between the speakers, the presenters, sponsors, and the attendees. A lot of downtime, networking time. We'll have athlete appearances every day. We'll have some unique ideas that we're working on in terms of audience participation. And of course, you know, listen, it's different from Vegas and different from other cities. You know, we're recommending that you take your family with you. It's easier on you, and it's easier on the household when they're with you. I know that from experience, especially now where we're traveling every month to these regional events. And again, Disney World is like no other place. It's a fun place. And if you're going to tell your kids, I'm going to Disney World for a convention, they're going to want to go. And we've made it possible for you to do that through, you know, the discounts that we have on the room and the tickets, and especially that these attendance fees, if you check our early bird special, isn't going to bankrupt you. I think that's a big deal. Yeah, you know, you have an event to break even, make a couple of shekels, but, you know, to me, I learned from Rich Lorita, who I work with at Geller Group and Siva's. It's a relationship-driven business. It's all about, relationships and building them. And that's one thing that Dan and I, really know. Listen, I met Dan 6 years ago, maybe, through...
More than that.
Yes, it was more than that. I think I might have been at the law firm at the time, maybe, starting or just when I started out or whatever. But anyway, that's how it is. It's, networking and meeting people through other people. That's how you develop these long-term relationships, and what better way to do that by, staying a couple days with us in Orlando. So anyway, let's move on. Topic for this week is going to be quick fixes for 401k plan sponsors, errors and problems. Lots of issues dealing with retirement plans, especially 401k plans, and there are some errors and problems that could get a quick fix. And I think number one right off the top is a low deferral percentage rate. You know, if you're an advisor and you want to look at a plan that's hurting, a plan that has a low deferral percentage rate to me is one of the signs that a plan, maybe it's not sick, but it's not really well. Sometimes a low rate of deferral is because of the rank and file employees. You know, if you... have a restaurant client, they're going to have a much lower deferral percentage than if you have a law firm client. I mean, that's the nature of the rank and file employees. And the problem with a low deferral rate is obviously testing is going to be a problem. There are certain fixes that you could do that. And, number one is obviously an automatic enrollment feature. A lot more plans are adding that. I think that that's a great kind of artificial way of boosting deferral rates. And, it's a really big concern. And I think also one of the reasons you have a low deferral rate sometimes is you really don't have a very good engagement process between the participants and the advisor. If you have, let's say, a 401k plan with 70 investment choices, you don't exactly increase deferral rates. Actually, when you have too many investment options that actually depreciates, depresses the deferral rate of plan participants. And, you know, that's a big deal. And again, I've always said it, I really think the engagement process between the plan and the plan participants isn't very good. I don't think that enrollment education meetings for most plans out there haven't really changed or, you know, gone on and really improved. You know, I've seen, you know, funerals that are livelier than most enrollment meetings. So, you know, that's, you know, these are different options that you could have for a quick fix on how to increase that deferral percentage rate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to your point, it's definitely a red flag. It's one of the things all the plan rating services, the Brightscopes of the world, it's one of their factors that they take into consideration for the health of a plan. Definitely agree with the point on sort of a paralysis by analysis. You know, there's statistics out there that pretty much show you exactly what the sweet spot is in terms of funds. You know, typically it's 20 to 21 options, I think, is you know, sort of the ideal place to be in terms of number of options. You know, the other thing too is a plan that has low participation, you know, that to me is an opening, right? That's your competitors. That's a plan that's ripe for, poaching. You know, that you call the plan sponsor, you see the participation is so low, you know, a rival advisor can go in there and say, hey, listen, your current guy isn't working hard enough, right? He's not engaging with the participants, especially if the plan has a good match. You know, we have a plan and albeit it's geographically, you know, they're all over the place. So it's hard to have sort of a centralized message. But in today's world, you know, you could leverage technology to sort of overcome that. But the plan offers a safe harbor, super generous deal, and the participation's at like 40%. You know, so that's something that sort of drives me nuts, and I kind of wish the plan sponsor would fire the advisor, but you know, that we'll save that for another podcast. But yeah, look, it's auto enrollment is definitely a great way to increase low participation. The regs have been changed, so you have a lot more leash in terms of administrating that. You know, if there are hiccups in terms of getting people initially enrolled. You know, the regs are a lot more forgiving than they were when that provision originally came out. So there's really no reason not to employ an auto enrollment, at least in my opinion.
I agree. That's a good cheap fix. But of course, you know, the hardest part is really improving the engagement process. And of course, you know, the low deferral percentage rate, that's tied to, you know, the next topic, which is the failed actual deferral percentage test. You know, in normal English, let's not get bogged down into the two times rule, but, you know, the ADP rate of the highly compensated employees really has to be within 2 percentage points of the lower paid people. And of course, highly compensated employees, the IRS says it's $125,000 or more. You know, of course, the IRS doesn't live in New York City or Long Island. You know, $125,000, I was making that a long time ago, like, you know, more than 10 years ago. I didn't feel rich then, and I certainly wouldn't feel rich now. But, you know, the problem with the ADP rate, obviously, is the plan fails. You either got to do refunds to the highly compensated employees after the end of the year, which, you know, is not really a nice surprise. Hey, by the way, here's the 1099 for these deferrals you thought you were going to put in, but you can't because we failed. Or the plan sponsor makes a qualified non-elective contribution in order to make the highly compensated non-highly compensated employees, you know, increase because it's treated as an elective in some sorts by being fully vested. And then, of course, going forward, if a plan has consistently failed discrimination tests, ADP, and of course ACP, or maybe even top heavy, the best avenue is to go safe harbor. And, you know, it's amazing sometimes over the years you would talk to a plan sponsor, but they were consistently failing. And nobody broached the subject of, using a safe harbor plan design. And I always talk about the story where I worked with a client that was using one of the payroll companies. Consistently failed. The owner of the company had to give up $10,500 of a $12,000 deferral as a refund. And had they, the payroll provider, talked about the valuation reports, they would have found out that a $7,500 QNEC would have made the plan pass. So that's, that's the issue. And, the problem, obviously refunds are a problem, but of course that doesn't cost the employer anything. If they make a QNEC, if they go forward and make a safe harbor, obviously it's going to cost them extra money in contributions to, their employees.
Yeah. I mean, we run into that, if you know your plan is going to fail consistently, then change it. There's so many things that can go wrong in the timing. I mean, a lot of plan sponsors have a hard time just meeting the 3/15 deadline. And then if the plan fails, not only do you have to get those out before the end of the plan year, but you have to pay the excise tax, the 10% excise tax. Your executives are usually ticked off because they're the folks that they're the folks that are affected, that don't get the full benefit of the plan. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in that equation, So if the numbers just aren't there, the participation numbers aren't there on your non-highlies, then safe harbor is really the best thing that you can do. Right? It might cost you a couple more dollars if you're the, a small business owner. But you're also going to benefit from it, because I'm pretty sure in that equation you'd be one of the folks that's getting the refunds as well. So, I think a lot of people get real nervous about safe harbors. There's immediate vesting, there's a stated match, there's a commitment there. I think when you actually take time to step back and do the math, assuming that there's an employer contribution already in place, the delta, the cost benefit is gonna be justifiable.
Exactly, absolutely. And then, of course, next on our list is the normal variety compliance errors. The problem with compliance errors, I always say, they're usually only discovered two ways. One, there is a change in the TPA, and the new TPA discovers, what bodies are buried. And number two, if there's a government audit. And, errors happen. I mean, a 401k plan is kind of like, heavy machinery. There's a lot of moving parts. And, the plan sponsor really has to find out exactly, what was the error and how it happened. And, it's important really for the plan sponsor to really understand who made the error and what adjustments need to be made. And I think a plan review every now and then, annually or whatnot, I think it's something that they should do to check the plan out to make sure that there's no problems. And, because there's nothing worse than having this false sense of security that your plan is up to snuff and you find out that it's not. And we know too many times... you as a TPA 316 plan consultant, certainly my role as risk attorney, 316 administrator, TPA attorney, all that kind of stuff, a lot of errors go on.
Oh, undoubtedly. So, we're in the heart of audit season right now, coming up on the normal filing deadline next week. And one of our clients... the auditor, has got their list of outstanding stuff. And the bottom of the list for this particular client was mentioning this payroll issue at one of their locations. And, I didn't know about it, right? So I thought it was something from the past that I forgot about. I was asking to get reminded of it. It wasn't at all something from the past. It was something that was discovered a couple of days ago. And essentially, the old payroll person, because payroll was done internally. Now, this is a 1,000-person company with a $25 million plan, let's call it. They had payroll. Payroll is done internally. And they discovered that the old payroll lady was somewhat rogue and was kind of making stuff up in terms of the application of the match. Making stuff up, she basically coded everything wrong in ADP.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure there's a way to fix it. I'm not sure that they have the data to tie everything up for the audit. Right? And this is a plan that we're on, right? We're looking at the payroll, but, you know, in that chain, the source of the data was corrupt. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's proof that you know, you need to get administration of this plan in the hands of folks that have more experience in handling it. You know, I'll let you guys know how it turns out, definitely, but at this point, just, you know, I was laughing about it last night, because this lady was very adversarial with us. You know, she pushed back a lot. She constantly was trying to initiate, you know, issues, you know, to sort of get us thrown out.
I wonder why that is.
Exactly, bud. Exactly. So, yeah.
That's actually
Kevin. We'll see how it turns out.
That was a Kevin Spacey. That's a Kevin Spacey line in one of, I think, the most underrated movies of all time, The Negotiator, with Samuel L. Jackson. You're all his friends. You know, you all want to kill them. You know, I wonder why that is.
No, but I couldn't believe it yesterday. And I'm looking at emails at like 10 o'clock at night, and I almost fell off my chair.
Exactly. You know, that's an employee that went into business for themselves, as I always like to use.
Yes.
Next on our hit list, we'll talk about it just like a minute or two, because we always talk about it. Timely deposit deferrals, big deal. You know, this is, when I mean big deal, I'm not mean sarcastically. This is like the number one problem with plans today, late deferral of deposits. I was on this morning a call with a client of mine, a big multiple employer plan in New Jersey. Late deferrals, that was the issue. You have adopting employers, one of them is going to be late. Sure, it was like $13 of problems. But the problem is that obviously if you put it on your 5500 that you were late in depositing deferrals and you didn't apply to the DOL's program, you will get a letter back from the DOL saying we don't have a record of you applying to our program. So you got late deferral deposits. If you do it once, chances are you will do it again. I've never met a plan sponsor who only did it once. When you do it multiple times.
Recidivism!
Yeah, if you do it multiple times, put a procedure in place to make sure. How do we handle payroll? How can we deposit it? Let's sit down and fix this.
Yeah. There's just, you know, there's a lack of urgency. They don't quite understand what's involved, what's attached to it, what the responsibilities are. You know, that said, I've had plan participants. They're more worried about the timeliness of deferrals than the plan sponsors are. You know, you've got some guys that read an article about something, and then, you know, they think they're the they're a resident expert on the subject, and you know they're breaking chops, so to speak. You know, if a deferral is submitted 2 or 3 days after, you know, the normal time. You know, so legitimate, it's almost like the relatives in the DOL or something, you know, legitimate, but, you know, I think some of that stuff can be excessive. You know, we correct all that stuff. So typically anything outside of 5 days is something that, you know, we look at, but again, but you know, even with somebody looking out for it. If the plan sponsor is not sending that file over within the window, you know, there's only so much, you know, even we can do to sort of encourage them to get that done in a timely manner.
Right. It's leading the horse to the water and having them drink kind of argument, you know.
Yeah.
You can only do so much. And, of course, next on our list, another, you know, the next two ones to conclude this session, we talk about it all the time. Missing former participants. We're talking about that lately because the Department of Labor is talking about that lately, and they're concerned with, you know, former participants who aren't located. So, you know, they're asking questions as, you know, what's the procedure? How do you locate them? That sort of deal. And in my opinion, if you kind of nudge, and I've written an article that's going to be published in a few weeks, we give the nudge to some former participants who just terminated, and suggest they take the money with them, and encourage them to a point. That cuts down on the opportunity for these participants to become missing. It becomes a headache when we have a plan termination and we got to locate these people to pay them out. And again, Department of Labor is telling us that's one of their focal points now. You know, what are you doing for these missing participants? If you have this automatic rollover thing for the cash outs, you know, what's the procedure? We've been talking about that of late, and especially the talking about, you know, our IRA product that's coming off the ground. So, you know, that's a big deal. And again, the quick fix is good record keeping, keeping up to date with the former participants, and kindly suggesting that they take the money with them. You don't want to, you know, there's consent for participants above the threshold, which is, depending on your plan, $1,000 or $5,000. And you don't want to be held to that you're really, really pushy and you violated their consent, or, you know, get any kind of, you know, blowback from the Department of Labor. So, you know, it's getting them out, you know, when they terminate is probably the best for everybody. I know that doesn't happen a lot of the times. But, you know, you don't want a situation where you have a plan 20 years from now and you still got participants' accounts, you know, they terminated 20 years before because of the, you know, ERISA notice requirements, the legality of, you know, opportunities to invest and all that kind of stuff. And you don't need that headache.
Yeah, look, as a 316, I don't want anything to do with that headache. Yeah. Get those steps out of the plan as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And generally, you know, even those large balances, if they're to the point, you know, I'm assuming, and this is a shameless plug for coming down the pike soon, assuming that the landing spot where you want the money to go outside of your plan is at least equal to or better than the pricing they're getting within the plan, then it's a complete no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, I expect this missing participant issue to become larger and larger as the Department of Labor has more focus on it and the ability to have further guidance on it. So that's a really big concern. And of course, last but not least, we talk about it all the time because it's, to me, the number two error that I see these days with 401k plans, and that's using the wrong definition of compensation. You know, anybody who's using other than W-2, if you're excluding a certain part of compensation, let's say if you're an auto dealership and you're excluding the car reimbursements, you know, for the taxable use of the car because you're giving your salespeople the right to drive a new Cadillac or whatever you're selling. Or, you know, you're excluding bonuses, commissions, anything outside of W-2. This could be a glaring problem because it might force you to make up corrective contributions for, you know, missed deferral opportunities or employer contributions. And what's worse is you really never intended to make a contribution to this compensation anyway. But if your document says that you have to make matching contributions or profit-sharing contributions on bonuses and commissions and you never intended that, that's going to be a problem. And the best way and the easiest fix and a quick fix is to talk to your third-party administrator and say, this is what our intent for contribution is. This is what we want to allow people to defer and get contributions on. And just tell us if the plan document allows us to do that. Is it consistent with what we do in practice? And if a plan sponsor does that, it would pretty much eliminate this compensation issue, which is, again, a big, big problem these days.
Yeah, huge problem. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, at least from our perspective, cause of operational errors. There's no need to have it be overly complex. You know, W-2 is fine. I look at some of these definitions and I'm just, I don't understand why.
Right.
Like, is the employee really going to benefit that substantially from him being able to defer on his car allowance? Like, that's not going to change their life. You know, so I don't really see the value in complicating that. W-2 is the safest way to go. Don't create landmines for yourself, right? Like
that's a great saying.
So
don't put yourself in harm's way is another way of expressing it. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you're asking yourself, for trouble when you have provisions out. Outside the box type of provisions are always a recipe for disaster. I've always said that. I remember years ago, I was working for Geller Group, and I'll never forget there was another ERISA attorney out west. Was working on the TPA's on our client and drafted a matching contribution amendment, which was just so drafted awfully. And I remember talking to our conversion specialist, and I said, I know what he was trying to do, but good luck trying to administer it. And I think that if you're an employer and you have kind of these intricate compensation provisions, that's not even talking about the testing part of it to prove that it's not discriminatory. But when you put in an out-of-the-box or exotic definition of compensation, you're only putting yourself in harm's way.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
Keep it simple, stupid. KISS, in honor of the bands. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what I always say with plan provisions. So anyway, that concludes another fun-filled episode of That 401k Podcast. We hope that you check out that 401kside.com for all the articles that I write, as well as sign-up pages for all of our upcoming events, including the fun that we're going to have at Disney World. So it's Ari and Dan saying so long.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather.